Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
All right, I'm just a little guy today, just a little guy playing around on the radio because I have some awesome guests. And Judge Paul Newby, he's on the North Carolina State Supreme Court in the studio with me for the full hour. So we'll be talking to Justice Newby here on the breaks, and then we're going to spend the whole show together in the second half. But we've got our good friend, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest on deck. So we're going to talk to Dan here in just a second. And then we have Laura Trump. Yes, that Trump calling in for the second segment today. And she's actually a Carolina girl. She was raised around the Wilmington area, graduated from NC State, met Eric Trump, didn't know he was that Trump, and then married into that family, and then has been very involved, actually, in North Carolina politics for President Trump. So we're going to talk to her for a little bit in the second segment. So we got a lot to do today because the stakes are high, and we need to keep having these conversations. And one of the things that's great was watching my good friend, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, last night in a debate with Governor Cooper. Great job, bro. That was awesome. I would call that a shellacking. How are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to November 4th, if that's going to mean anything this year. We don't know if we're actually going to have many answers. But that was great. I mean, that was, I think last night, Dan, was seeing something from the scriptures just played out, which is having that peace that surpasses all understanding, because you definitely had the peace of the Lord with you as you engaged in that. How did you feel about it, and how did you feel about how it went?
Well, no, you got that right. I mean, a complete peace. I felt good about it going into it. Obviously, you know, we were prepared. I thought the debate went really well. First time, and you know, the entire governor's campaign, this is the number one governor's campaign in the United States of America, and the media has not allowed us to go head-to-head yet. The governor hasn't allowed us to go head-to-head. That was the first time. So I think it was eye-opening to a lot of people, and I think we were able to get a lot of message out.
Yeah, and I appreciated that you were able to cover a lot of ground. The first 20 minutes, however, reminded me of when I used to teach some youngsters in Sunday school, and their answer was always Jesus, and Governor Cooper's answer was always masks, and Dan Forrest wants to kill people. And then there was the whole thing about your supporters, quote-unquote your supporters, burning masks. That was so bizarre. I just didn't even know where that was coming from, and it sounds like the only thing he has to sell is fear.
Yeah, I mean, I think if nobody got anything else out of it, I hope they got the idea that, you know, when your opponent will spend $30 million against you on one issue, it's a smokescreen for something else. I mean, all he talks about for 6 months or 5 months probably is masks, and it's just a smokescreen for what? For all of the things that he doesn't want the people of North Carolina to know. He doesn't want the people to know that, you know, half the deaths have come from nursing homes that he is in 100% control of. He doesn't want people to know that he has vetoed every teacher pay raise in North Carolina. He's vetoed every state budget along the way. He vetoed the Born Alive bill, which is just to keep people from committing infanticide. He vetoed the ICE bill, which puts violent criminals out on the street. He's mismanaged DOT. He's mismanaged the hurricane efforts. He's mismanaged the unemployment office. He's allowed angry mobs to destroy our cities. I mean, I can go on and on and on. No wonder you want to have an issue that you can put up as a smokescreen to keep people from seeing what you've actually done or not done.
That's exactly right. You just create a straw man. You put him over in the corner and say, okay, let's talk about this, which takes your mind off of everything else. It really is an amazing list of failures on his part. But why so much money? Why is North Carolina, Dan, so important on a governmental level from the governor's race? Our good friend Paul Newby's in here today talking about the North Carolina State Supreme Court. Of course, for Trump, this is a big deal. We've got Laura Trump calling in the second segment. But what's the big deal about North Carolina? Why so much money coming in from places not name North Carolina?
Well, North Carolina's been the tip of the spear actually for quite some years. It's just a little bit bigger this time. You know, this is that gateway to the South, gateway to the Bible Belt. The Democrats want to take control of it for obvious reasons, because if things start to get a stronghold in the South, then the whole country will end up going their way. But we know that in North Carolina, it's the top four state for President Trump. There's not a path to the White House without North Carolina. Certainly the number one Senate race in the country with Tillis and Cunningham, and the number one governor's race in the country. You know, and all of these things just to come to bear when you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars being poured into the state from out-of-state interests. So there's a lot on the line going on right here in North Carolina.
Yeah, and I think that's important to know, and we all need to have a conscience and be aware of that as our impact on the rest of the nation. But let's not forget about the state of affairs here in North Carolina, and that's why you were doing such a great job of listing all these things and all the ways that Governor Cooper has mismanaged that position. And it's important that we think federally, but we also need to remember that, like Tip O'Neill used to say, all politics is local, and a lot of it still is. Do you think that the people of North Carolina are aware of just how much is at stake when it comes to the governor's race and whether we allow Governor Cooper to spend another 4 years, or we usher him out and bring you in, which would be a godsend? Do you think people are aware of the weight of it all?
Well, I think they're getting more aware of it. I think this is probably the first time in their lives they've really paid real close attention to a governor's election like this, because as one friend of mine said, you know, I'd never paid attention to politics before until politics came crashing into my life. Mm-hmm. And so you have Governor Cooper's politics is crashing into a lot of people's lives. We've never had a governor who has told businesses they're non-essential before. You know, it started off saying, hey, just 2 weeks, everybody, just 2 weeks. If you'll just do your part, everything's going to be fine. And 2 weeks turned into a month, and a month to 2 months, 2 months to 4 months, and 4 months to 8 months. All of a sudden, people are starting to pay attention. And then you have all the inconsistent decisions that you and I have talked about before. You know, my favorite one is the latest one, I think, where a couple weeks ago, nobody could go to a football game in a 70,000-seat stadium. And then 6 days later, it could be 7% because somehow science said 7%. Somehow science changes when you hit the South Carolina border. It changes when you hit the Tennessee border, and it changes when you hit the Georgia border. So I think people are starting to wake up to these things now and go, wait a minute, this is a bunch of nonsense. So, you know, I think that we're getting there. We'll see what happens come November 4th.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, generally, from a liberal perspective, their answer is government, and they don't trust the people. And from a conservative perspective, and you certainly made this obvious time and time again, you trust the people to make that you trust them to be adulting, you trust them to be responsible, and that's really a big difference. Who do you look to? Do you look to the government, or do you look to being able to take advantage of your freedoms? Just one last charge. I know we're going to talk to you again, but one last encouragement to people, Dan, to get out and vote, because early voting started already.
Yeah, early vote starts today. We're actually out in western North Carolina today, and everywhere we've gone, the lines have been wrapped around the buildings for early voting. So get out and vote.
Amen. God bless you, Dan. Thanks for calling in, buddy. We look forward to talking to you next week.
Take care, brother. Tell Justice Newby I said hello.
I will. You just did. We'll be right back with Laura Trump. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Well, you would think, and this was true in 2016, you would think that many members of the Trump family should just go ahead and relocate to North Carolina, or should change their license or maybe get their mail here, because North Carolina is an important state. And like we were just talking with the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest, who hopefully will be our next governor, that you look at that and go, okay, this is important federally. I get it. I understand where North Carolina goes, the presidency goes, and that's certainly true this year. And we've been getting a lot of attention, but did you know that one of the Trumps actually is a North Carolinian, and it's Laura Trump herself? Laura, thanks for calling in today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I was in North Carolina yesterday. I got to sleep at home at my parents' house last night. It was amazing.
What a cool blessing is that? Because you grew up in Wilmington, right? And you graduated from NC State.
That is correct. Yeah, I love any excuse to come home. We've been hitting the state of North Carolina hard, as you can see from me being there, the president being there, 19 days to go. So we want to leave nothing on the table.
Yeah, it certainly looks like that's exactly what you guys are doing. I wanted to ask you a question real quick, because you and I have a mutual friend in Joe Knopp, and you met him when they were working on Unplanned, and then they came up with this documentary, which is really wonderful. I had Daryl Lefevre on just a couple weeks ago, and we've been pushing it here on the show. The Trump I Know, and I think that's so valuable, Laura, because a lot of people just kind of see the presidential side, the blustery side, the Twitter side of your father-in-law, but there's a side of the president that I think a lot of us don't know, and it was incredible to watch all these women that are a part of the Trump enterprise, the business, the campaign, and they're in the White House. What was it like for you to be involved with that, the Trump I Know?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was so honored. Joe is an incredible guy, and he came to me and said, I want to put together a documentary that reflects truly the real Donald Trump and who he really is. Because a lot of times, you're right, you don't get to see that side of him. I'm actually on the road right now in Michigan with Katrina Pearson, who is also a part of the Trump I Know. And look, the reality is the people who know him best are the people who get to work with him, the people that get to see him day in and day out. And that's why I think this is such an important documentary. I think that people need to see this who have any question as to who Donald Trump is, why he ran for president, what he goes through, what we all go through in the family. It's a lot. And you know what? It is a job that I think we're so blessed to have him in this role. I think that he knows that he was the only person that could really fill this role in our country and what we needed right now. And you hear about it all in the documentary. I was so proud to be a part of that and to get to share truly the president that I know and the man that I know in Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was beautifully done, and it was really helpful for me. You know, I can be skeptical. I voted for your father-in-law in 2016. I'm voting for him on November 3rd. I'm a day of kind of guy, so I'll be there, and I'm proudly voting for him. But it was so helpful to me and encouraging to me, quite frankly, to see this whole side of our president that I didn't really know much about. Well, when you met Eric, your husband, you didn't really know, okay, that Trump. But when you meet this iconic guy who's now our president, what was something, Laura, that surprised you about getting to know our president, Mr. Trump, who obviously is your father-in-law? What was the surprise to you when you got to know him?
Well, it's intimidating anytime you meet someone who could become your father-in-law or mother-in-law, but when their last name happens to have Trump on the end, I mean, it kind of amps things up. Here's what I can tell you is the first time I met Donald Trump, I didn't know I was going to meet him. My husband gave me no warning. I don't know if that's like a guy thing or maybe he actually saved me because I probably would have freaked out a little bit. But within the first couple of minutes of meeting my father-in-law, he put me completely at ease. He looked directly at you, engages with you, wanted to know about me, wanted to know about my family. And he truly cared to get to know the person that I am, you know, immediately. And for me, somebody coming from, you know, North Carolina, from Wilmington, growing up in a middle-class family, I had never expected that I would even be in the same room with Donald Trump, let alone have a connection with him like that. But I think you often hear that from people that spend time around the president. He's very engaging. He's very attentive and really hones in on exactly who you are and things about you that oftentimes you don't even know about yourself. And that's exactly the experience that I first had when meeting him. So I was pleasantly surprised and thank goodness put at ease almost immediately.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a wonderful glimpse on the inside. Thanks for sharing that, Laura. So in terms of, I think a lot of people are understanding, and I cannot explain what's going on with the polls, but I think a lot of Americans, especially here in North Carolina, understand, and I don't think using the word existential, an existential threat to the future of the country, I think a lot of people are waking up to that and seeing this divide between what your father-in-law stands for, what the president stands for, and what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris stand for, and those on the left. This is deeper and wider than we've ever seen before, and I really do fear for the future of the country. Do you think, Laura, as you're out there, you're doing a lot of events and Women for Trump and all this, do you think people are understanding just what's at stake in this election?
I really think they do, and I sure hope they do, because you're right. Look, this is the most consequential election in the history of modern America. I mean, what we choose on November 3rd isn't just going to impact us for the next 4 years. It's going to impact us for the next several generations in America. When you have candidates like we have on the Democrat side advocating for socialist policies, advocating for full government takeover of so many aspects of your life, open borders, defunding the police, the Green New Deal. These are really frightening things for the future of America. It would truly, and in Joe Biden's own words, he said it, fundamentally transform America. Then you have Donald Trump on the other side fighting for the American dream, fighting to keep America the greatest country in the world. The prosperity that we've seen under this president's tenure in office is really unprecedented in such a short span of time. We've seen the lowest unemployment numbers of Donald Trump in the history of America. So many people lifted out of poverty, ending endless wars, renegotiating bad trade deals, revitalizing and rebuilding our military. I mean, this is Donald Trump, the businessman, wanting to go in and get the job done, but keep the American values that we have always appreciated in this country, keep the freedom we've always appreciated. So, look, November 3rd is a very consequential day. I do think people understand that. But to your point about the polls are wrong. But it also means that people have to get out and they have to vote for Donald Trump to make sure that we lock this thing up. Because we've seen the tricks the Democrats are trying to play on the other side, the nonsense, the universal vote by mail, extending out voting deadlines. It's scary to think, but we need to win by such an overwhelming margin of victory for Donald Trump on November 3rd. They can't dispute the results of this election.
Yeah, and I mean, you've been at obviously innumerable Trump rallies, and they're massive, and we get tens of thousands of people, but rallies do not win elections. Votes win elections. So, I mean, I've been pounding away on the air, and I'm just on Christian radio, and I know it makes some people nervous, but I don't answer to them. I only answer to the Lord. And because I care about my neighbor, and this country is full of our neighbors, you have to remember, it's great that people are enthusiastic. You see the flotillas, you see the car things going on. It's awesome. But none of that stuff matters if it doesn't translate into votes. We got about 40 seconds left, Laura. Just one word of encouragement or challenge to the few people that actually are undecided here in North Carolina.
Well, I think if you look at this from the broader perspective, I think we can all feel that this is an election bigger than us. This is on a spiritual level of sorts. And I'll tell you one thing, when one party is trying to take God out of things, one party is trying to keep God in things, I know which side I'm on, and I'm on the side that's keeping God in things. That is Donald Trump and the Republican Party. You have to vote like your life depends on it, like the future of America depends on it, because it absolutely does.
That's exactly right. Laura Trump, thanks so much for calling in today. I can't imagine how insane your schedule is, but God bless you. Thank you for all your work on behalf of not only your father-in-law, but on the nation. I hope we can do it again. Thanks for calling.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Talk to you again. She was sharp. Laura Trump, man, sharp. She knows what she's talking about. When we come back, Justice Paul Newby, a huge issue here in North Carolina. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It's great to hear from Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who, if you get out and do your job, will be the next governor of the great state of North Carolina. Laura Trump was just calling in, talking about her president, our president, her father-in-law, which is an interesting position to be in. And she's a Carolina girl, and talking about the stakes of this election. We, of course, are paying attention this week, and I've already spoken about it a lot, on the Honorable Supreme Court Justice, hopefully the next one, Amy Coney Barrett, who is operating at a level so far above just about every senator that's been on camera. Really amazing. So whether you agree with her jurisprudence as an originalist or not, I think we all should breathe a sigh of relief that we have somebody of that caliber that's most likely going to be on the Supreme Court of the United States, which is really encouraging. But that's not where the only game is played. There's also important things happening on a state level. And unfortunately, and Justice Newby is here with us, Justice Paul Newby, who's running for the Chief Justice of North Carolina Supreme Court, has been serving us and serving the Lord in that capacity for how long has it been now?
16 years.
16 years. Oh, my goodness. that I think the founding fathers would be a little upset that a recommendation and a process and an appointment to the United States Supreme Court would turn the whole country upside down, because I don't think they ever envisioned the Supreme Court being that powerful. It should have been, we need to take care of that. But not we're talking about 40, 50 years of impact, because that's what's going on. But that's true at the state level as well. That can we underestimate or do we do it, Paul, the power and the impact of a Supreme Court at any state, but in this case, North Carolina?
I've really wrestled with how we got to this point. I'm a student of history. I know you are. This idea of judicial review, that I've got both my federal and state constitutions here. It's okay. I'm a justice. I'm licensed to carry them.
Because those things are dangerous. That's almost propaganda today. That could almost get you arrested.
Let's talk about fundamental principles. Our rights come from God. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All are created equal, endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, property. We call it pursuit of happiness. And government is instituted among people to protect these fundamental rights and freedoms. So you've got the legislative branch making laws, executive branch supposedly carrying them out, not making law. And then you have the judicial branch enforcing the laws as intended, protecting fundamental constitutional rights, again, not making law. What happens if you have an executive branch and or a judicial branch that all want to make law? Mm-hmm. You have a train wreck in the legislative area, but then you've got, you know, like a schoolyard fight. Who's going to win? Well, it's the big guy in the room, and those are the courts.
Yeah.
The courts are the final say. But the North Carolina Supreme Court is the final say on the state constitution. Many people worry about the integrity of this election. The General Assembly looked at it, and they said, well, let's have a nonpartisan board of elections this time. So equal number of R's and D's should be fair and balanced. It should be no policy-driven other than fairness. I mean, that's what we want in an
election.
Yeah, it should
be civics, not politics.
Yeah.
Two different things.
So the current governor filed a lawsuit, came before our court, and our court, along party lines, voted to strike down as unconstitutional. Let me tell you this. Under the state constitution, okay, we have said that legislatures can do anything they want to unless they're expressly prohibited by our state constitution. So there has to be a finding beyond a reasonable doubt, the highest level of proof, that what has been done is unconstitutional. The majority, again, party lines, the majority struck it down. I dissented. And basically what the majority did to reach their decision to strike down a fair or bipartisan board of elections, they said the word law doesn't mean what the General Assembly passes alone. The word law means governor's policy preferences, and gave the governor a lawmaking position equal to the 170 legislators.
That's tyrannical, and it sounds like the divine right of kings. Whatever the king says, that might as well be God put it on another tablet and sent it down in Atlanta and Raleigh.
Well, now you're quoting a most recent decision dissent that I had, where I started out by saying, as a monarch, King Louis XVI famously said, it's the law because I'm king. Today, four members of this court adopt this view. Now, there's seven members of the Supreme Court. Even two of the six wouldn't go along with them. But four people are the majority. And without any legal basis, legislating from the bench, they enact their policy preference, and then come in and say, and we can do it because we're the justices.
Yeah, I mean, that's really alarming, and I think people are generally aware of how out of control much of our court system is, our judicial system, but they have to hear specifics like this to understand that that's essentially what they're saying is, no, whatever the governor wants to do, we're going to call that law too. Now we're going to air quote every time we use the word law. You said earlier, with a little bit of humor and a little bit of a broken heart, that you basically write dissents for a living at this point. So I want people to understand what's going on with the North Carolina State Supreme Court, because quite frankly, and I can do this because it's my show, if you show up between now, early voting, absentee ballot, whatever, November 3rd, and you don't vote for somebody like Paul Newby, you're remarkably selfish, because like he said, we're talking about things, and Laura Trump mentioned this too, forget yourself. We all need to get over ourselves, because I'm not voting for myself anymore. I'm voting for my four kids and their kids and their kids. That's where we're at in this country. So you have to elect people that understand, first of all, first principles, and understand the Constitution of the United States, as well as how it interacts with the Constitution of our state. But then if you can get somebody that understands that, plus the Holy Spirit, that's a no-brainer. So we owe our posterity a vote for people like Justice Newby. All right, so let me just get that out of the way. Back to what we were saying in terms of writing dissents for a living, because you've got a tough gig right now. I mean, my heart breaks for what you have to deal with.
Well, for a variety of reasons, the court has ended up being 1-6. I did an interview with different news outlets, and invariably they asked me, do you feel alone? And I just laugh.
By definition.
it's 1-6. And so, I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but each of my colleagues write one opinion, and I write six opinions, because I have to write my dissents.
Yeah, against all of them.
And why is that? It's judicial philosophy. It has to do with my foundational principle of the role of the courts. I believe that the courts are to apply our state and federal constitutions as written.
As written.
I believe that we interpret statutes as intended by the legislature that passed them. And I believe that we follow case law. We don't just go out and say, well, let's make a better world. That's not the judiciary's role. That's
right.
A legislative role.
That's right.
And so I fairly, impartially, and consistently apply the law as it is, not as I wish it were. I'm not a legislator in a black robe.
That's right.
So, that's my judicial philosophy. I've followed it for 16 years. Up until the last year and a half, I've been in the majority 80 to 90% of the time, and now here we are.
Now, how did we get ourselves into a position with the North Carolina State Supreme Court that we're a 1-6 minority position? How did we do that? Because we did it to ourselves.
Well, we did. It's a long and complicated question, but at the end of the day, it had to do with resignations. It had to do with ballot confusion. It had to do with other things. So this will be the first time that I'm running with a party label.
Yeah.
In 2004, 2012, Steve, you had to put up with me saying, Scooby Dooby, vote for Newby. Not anymore. I'm not saying Scooby Dooby, vote for Newby anymore. If you want a conservative, constitutionalist, common sense justice, then look for the Republican.
Now, you're running for the Chief Justice position of the North Carolina State Supreme Court. How is that unique or different from just serving as a regular justice on the court?
Well, the Chief Justice is first among equal of the seven justices. The Chief Justice certainly sets the agenda for the meetings. The Chief Justice calendars the cases. But then the Chief Justice is the head of the 6,500 judicial branch. Mm. In that branch, you have all kinds of constitutional officers. You have clerks of court. You have Superior Court judges, District Court judges. Frankly, the Chief Justice has a bully pulpit to influence all the judges in the state.
Wow.
And so the Chief Justice actually appoints 3 judge panels who hear constitutional questions. The Chief Justice assigns special, more complex cases. The Chief Justice appoints the Chief Judge at the Court of Appeals. The Chief Justice appoints the Chief Judge at the Chief Administrative Law Judge. So there are a lot of appointment powers, all mm-hmm. kinds of commissions that the Chief Justice appoints. But I would say the most important aspect from my perspective is to inspire the judicial branch to be fundamental in our approach. And what does that mean? Treat everybody the same, equal justice under the law.
Yeah.
Follow the law, treat everybody with kindness, humility, and respect, and get the cases done in a timely manner. We have backlogs. We hadn't had a jury trial in North Carolina since February. We've had all these other cases that could not move forward for various executive orders by the Chief Justice.
Yeah.
So people from around the state are asking me, when are our courts going to be open again? Which is shocking because our state constitution, Article 1, Section 18, says all courts shall be open. It says every person for injuries shall get right and justice to be administered without favor, denial, or delay.
Oh, there you go, quoting the Constitution again here at the state level. How dare you? Justice Paul Newby, running for Chief Justice in the North Carolina Supreme Court. PaulNewby.com. We've got more with Paul when we come back right after this.
If you're happy in your stuff, and if 10% enough, stay away from Jesus.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, talking with Justice Paul Newby, who hopefully will be the next Chief Justice of the North Carolina State Supreme Court, where he's served faithfully for all these years. But that's not up to him. He can pray, he can work, he can be out every night talking to people, but ultimately whether he's in that seat or not is up to you and it's up to me. So that's the deal, and like I said in the last segment, this vote and this election is not about you. Get over yourself. It's about your children and their children. By the way, it's about my children and my children's children as much as it is about your children and your children's children. So we all have to remember, like our founding fathers understood, that they did a lot of the things that our founding fathers did, they did out of a sense of duty to their posterity. Those are the people that come behind us. We don't even know what the word posterity means anymore. But they were much more selfless in their reasoning back then because they're looking at generational effect. And that's what we're looking at in this election. And whether you're talking about the presidential level or the federal level, you talk about Tom Tillis or whatever, but here on the state level in the North Carolina State Supreme Court, because the courts have become so powerful in this country, that's just a reality. And we need to have our kinds of people. And by the way, let me just ask you about this. And Paul Newby's here in the studio with us. And thanks, Paul, for being in here. I know how busy you are. I would think for me, my challenge, this is how I got out of jury duty once. So they call me in. And then it's a case where the defense for this 21-year-old guy was like, okay, this was entrapment. They busted his girlfriend, and then they busted him by using the girlfriend. And so, Mr. Noble, would you be able to, based on that, I'm not asking you to ignore the fact that he broke a law and he knew he was breaking the law. Could you actually rule against the police knowing that it's entrapment? And I said, okay, well, thanks for asking. Just so you know, all my cards on the table, I am a very conservative born-again Christian. And I am very uncomfortable with letting your client offer anything, especially since he knows he broke the law. He did it willingly. You didn't trap him into doing that. He broke the law willingly. And so, no, there's no way I'm going to let him off. You know, Mr. Noble, thanks for your time today. Judge, I'd like to excuse juror number 16. And I was out of there. My point being, and this for me, this would be difficult, but you brought this up earlier. Having to do your job outside of your personal opinion. Amy Coney Barrett said this the other day, that Justice Scalia told her, there are some decisions I made that were the right decision to make from a legal perspective that I wasn't happy about. But my job was not to enforce my feelings or my preferences. My job was to enforce the Constitution. Is that a difficult reality to kind of deal with? It would be for me, but you're a better man than I am.
You know, Steve, I took an oath in 2004 and again in 2012. These are 8-year terms. I took an oath to uphold the state and federal constitutions. And the only way I know to interpret the words of those constitutions are what the drafters intended. That's what we do with contracts all the time.
Right.
That's what we do with statutes. You got two choices there. You can make it up or you can interpret it as intended. And so as I interpret those documents as intended, we're very blessed at this point. A couple of things. One is the legal system still operates on truth and applying the law fairly, impartially, consistently to the truth that's been developed in a case, and that equals justice, okay? Does that mean we get it right all the time? Of course not. But I would ask people, if you could have a trial anywhere in the world, what justice system would you choose?
Oh, man, no-brainer.
And it's the United States. I mean, only 10% of the world have jury trials. 90% have judge trials. I'm so thankful for jury trials because I'd rather be tried by a jury of my peers than I had by a judge who is so susceptible to wrong influences.
Yeah, what a great point. How much of an impact did Christianity have on the North Carolina Constitution?
It has had a great deal of impact. Let me start out with in 1776, it states clearly that we have an inalienable right to worship Almighty God according to the dictates of our own consciences. That's 1776, okay? In 1868, we started out by first recognizing that during the Civil War there had been some issues where people's religious liberties had been infringed. So we added this phrase, we said, and no governmental authority whatsoever shall interfere with our fundamental right to worship God.
Wow.
We also added, we the people of the state of North Carolina, grateful to Almighty God, the sovereign ruler of nations, for the preservation of the American Union and the existence of our civil, political, and religious liberties, and acknowledging our dependence upon God for the continuation of those blessings. And we added, we hold these truths to be self-evident, right out of the Declaration. And we added to that.
And that's in the North Carolina State Constitution.
It's in our state constitution. And it also says that we're entitled to the fruits of our own labor.
Wow.
So when the Bowling Association recently came before us and argued that some of the governor's orders were unconstitutional, that's what they used to say, we're entitled to the fruits of our own labor, and we don't have any fruits.
Yeah, yeah, that's a problem. We're talking to Justice Paul Newby. PaulNewby.com is the website, N-E-W-B-Y. He doesn't have to say it anymore, but it's still Scooby-Dooby, vote for Newby. Okay, and then if you got my list, what list, Steve? I'm so glad you asked. Actually, I'm not going to give you names, okay? I'm just not. But a couple of very prominent people, and you would know who they are, just got me a message in the last 24 hours that says, hey, Steve, can I get your list? That's my list, unabashedly telling you who to vote for. So hopefully I've earned your trust. I'm a conservative, but number one, I'm a Jesus follower. I apply that to everything that I do, not perfectly, but willingly, and certainly trying to reach that bar. And so if you want any help with that, that's actually at the homepage. So you can go to thestevenobleshow.com and find it there. You'll find Paul Newby on that list. If you need a little help, a little nudge, or just want to go do what I ask you to do, that would be an easy way to do it. And I do that, not for you, not for me, but again, for our posterity. But I think that it's encouraging for especially believers to understand how much our faith is actually integrated into the foundation and the fabric of this nation. Because we need to remember that.
Absolutely. And if you look at 1 Timothy 2, and everybody talks about pray for those in authority over us, and they stop there, Steve. Mm. That's a sad place to stop, because Paul goes on to tell us to what end we are to pray, that we can live quiet and peaceful lives in all godliness and holiness. And then it talks about sharing the gospel. Steve, 43% of Americans report today that they're depressed, they have anxiety, suicide rates through the roof, drug overdose through the roof. Why is that? They're looking for peace in all the wrong places. Yeah. And we have the message of peace. We are lifeguards fully trained to go rescue the perishing, and we're standing on the beach going, well, do we have our freedom to do this? You know?
That's right.
I argue that religious liberty is the number one issue on the ballot this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we tend to miss that. Listen, our forefathers were willing to go to war, seeing their political liberties disappear, because they knew with political liberty was going with their religious liberty. And that's why the Puritans came over in the first place, was for religious freedom and to be able to practice their faith in Christ the way they wanted to. And they understood that everybody was watching them. If you read any of the original writings from the Puritans back then, it's amazing what a sense of mission they had. And we have to remember that. And I think we struggle. I struggle with this. I struggled with it when I was at the National Prayer March with Franklin Graham, okay? Because I think we have to be careful not to conflate our love of country with our lordship of Christ. Because oftentimes I think we kind of blend that stuff together a little too much. It's hard to balance our citizenship in the kingdom and our citizenship in the nation. Do you see that too? I mean, I struggle with that to make sure I'm not what I would call a political idolater.
Well, I think the important thing is, particularly in an election cycle, is to take Scripture and say what biblical principles are at stake here.
Yeah.
Galatians 2:20 says, I've been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. So what does that mean when I vote? That means that God is working through us, yes, even to cast our votes.
Yeah.
And as we do so, we take those biblical principles, we apply them. It's not about personalities. It's not about political parties. It's about the principles that are at stake. And what are the biblical principles to give us the religious liberty? Frankly, religious liberty is seen now as a luxury as opposed to a fundamental foundational principle. Washington said two pillars of our government. Those two pillars are morality and religion. And he said in his farewell address that morality does not exist apart from religion. Therefore, we need to encourage our populace to be religious.
Yeah. Yeah. And to remember that, like C.S. Lewis said, you've never met a mere mortal. Everybody's either an everlasting splendor or an eternal horror. You're either going to an eternity with the Father, or you're going to an eternity separated from the Father in what we call hell. And you need to remember that. And that's even more important than politics. However, politics and the elections, that's the here and the now, which is populated in this country, in this state, by what? 10.5 million people, 330 million people nationwide. They're all your neighbor. And they all matter right now because they're all made in the image of God, whether you agree with them or not. So we have a tremendous kingdom opportunity in the way we do politics. Because that's how we care for people in this country, is through the law. Yeah. Just encourage people, Paul. We only got like 2 minutes left. Just encourage people in terms of getting out and voting. If they were thinking, maybe I can't stand the vitriol, all this stuff. But just encourage and challenge us that we have an obligation, I think a moral obligation, to engage.
I would say it's beyond that. I mean, Jesus said to render unto Caesar what's Caesar's and to God what's God's. Okay, I start with what is God's. Look in the mirror. Hmm. That belongs to God. Okay, but to Caesar, we're to pay taxes. We are to understand our civic responsibility, community, love people, love our neighbor as ourselves. But I would say in our government, one of our most important responsibilities is to vote, and to vote according to biblical principles, and to be on our knees praying that God in his mercy might allow us to have the liberty that we need to spread the gospel message.
We're talking to Justice Paul Newby, paulnewby.com. How can we pray for you, and how can we help you?
Well, always need wisdom. James 1:5. I need favor as I do my work. And then just, with the upcoming election, that God's will be done. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I could not do the job of Chief Justice unless God calls me. When God calls, he equips.
Yeah. Amen to that. And on November 3rd, God is with us. And on November 4th, God is with us. And on December 5th and on January 5th, and whether it's another 2020 year or a 2021 year, remember, God is with us. He'll never leave us nor forsake us. And that should give us great courage and great peace and great calm in the middle of the craziness that is life here in America in 2020. Paul Newby, God bless you, brother. Thank you so much for coming in today and sharing with us.
Thank you for this opportunity.
You're very welcome. Mi casa, su casa. You're welcome anytime you want to come in. Justice Paul Newby, paulnewby.com, N-E-W-B-Y, paulnewby.com. You want some help voting? TheSteveNobleShow.com. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.